Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We're Hit Radio. I am your host, Mark Matheny, and today is the 19th of August. I'm also going to be broadcasting for 6 Semper Tyrannis News. If anyone out there who doesn't know, I do have that channel, website, I'm sorry, 6 Semper Tyrannis News, and also a YouTube channel, Matenyahu. It's Matenyahu. And today I'm going to talk about the deep state push against the Trump administration that's been ongoing since he was duly elected, and especially the push now, right before the midterm elections, to silence social media with the hopes that they can, the left I'm talking about, the deep state, who I'm going to talk about today, their hopes to silence the conservative side, the right, the Republican conservative side of the media, the alternative news media and so on, in order so they can, you know, just push and gain more ground again, because they've been losing so miserably. And one of the things that has happened is, I'm sure everyone has known by now, Alex Jones was silenced on social media on lots of platforms, and then recently Twitter came out and shut him down for 7 days, things of this nature. So, you know, in hopes to kind of gain some ground for the left, I guess. But recently, the
what is Bill Song?
Sorry.
Ask your healthcare provider.
Got some noise here going on. All right. So, like I was saying, the Twitter CEO, Jack Dorsey, has recently come out in an interview that was on CNN on Saturday. The company has a responsibility to be open about its political viewpoints, but it has to operate without bias, he says. But he did say this. Quote, we need to constantly show that we are not adding our own bias, which I fully admit is more left-leaning. Okay, so he admitted that they lean to the left, which, you know, which is not unknown. But he, you know, tried to go on and justify that, you know, they're not using their political ideology to ban people. He said, but the real question behind the question is, are we doing something according to political ideology or viewpoints, and so on. But, you know, this is the point. We know that he's left-leaning. We know that Twitter and all these other companies are trying to shut down the right. Twitter came out, you know, a little later than the rest of them, and I guess only did like a 7-day ban on Alex Jones, but still has done so. And meanwhile, you've got the whole group of deep state operatives now in panic mode, turning against each other and so on with this Mueller investigation. And it's pretty pathetic. James Clapper, for example, was who's the you know, director of national intelligence, the former director, I should say. But he was talking about John Brennan's rhetoric. Now, you know, if you don't know, John Brennan's security clearance has been revoked, and of course they're attacking the president now, stating that he's trying to silence all of his accusers and so on. But now, different deep state operatives are even turning against themselves now. And there's a good article from The Hill that says former director of national intelligence James Clapper said Sunday that he thinks former CIA director John Brennan's rhetoric is becoming an issue in and of itself. He said John and his rhetoric have become an issue in and of itself. He was saying this on CNN's State of the Union. He said John is subtle like a freight train, and he's going to say what's on his mind. Clapper's comments came in response to an op-ed penned by Brennan in the New York Times, in which he wrote that President Trump colluded with Russia in the 2016 election. Basically, Clapper and them, you know, he's saying that he has a right to voice his concerns, but this is where he just outrightly says that he believes that, or he's stating that, you know, Trump colluded with the Russians. Clapper said he emphasized with Brennan, but voiced concerns for Brennan's fiery rhetoric toward Trump and the administration. He says, I think that the common denominator among all of us in the intelligence community that have been speaking up is genuine concern about the jeopardy and threats to our institutions. Well, really, this is not the case, guys. I mean, if you go back and look with Brennan, Clapper, Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, all of these people, the real concern is that their coup attempt failed. This is what they're concerned about. And it says that the Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Richard Burr, who is a Republican of North Carolina, on Thursday took aim at Brennan for purporting to know as a fact that the Trump campaign colluded with a foreign power. He said, if his statement is based on intelligence that he's been that he's seen since leaving the office, it constitutes an intelligence breach. He says if he has some other personal knowledge or evidence of collusion, it should have been disclosed to the special counsel and not to the New York Times. And see, this is what part of the problem is, and this is why the Trump administration has now decided to come out and pull these security clearances from these deep state operatives because of things like this. If they have information claiming that they know certain things, then obviously it should be turned over to the special counsel and not used to go on mainstream TV and do leaks and things of this nature. But Burr also added that Trump has full authority to rescind any security clearance if the statements were purely political and based on conjecture. And so this is why they believe that that these deep state operatives are using their security clearance powers for political gain, for monetary gain, and so on. And so this is why the president has pulled these things, saying that, you know, Brennan is lying, and his recent conduct, characterized by increasing frenzied commentary, is wholly inconsistent with access to the nation's most closely held secrets and facilities, the very aim of our adversaries, which is to sow division and chaos. This is why President Trump has revoked these deep state operatives' security clearances. And this is part of the reason I want to talk about this, because I talk about the push for a world government. And so you have these level of elites that are above approach, I'll say, above the law, as they would say, who are pushing for more of an international form of government. And a lot of people would say, well, this is conspiracy theory. But it's not really theory when you can go forth and you can see from the mouths of the elites themselves who are in power, when they stated out of their own mouths that they want international government. One prime example of this that is often overlooked by pretty much everybody, except for those who know, was a quote from David Rockefeller, who is now deceased, but who has been in power, who has been in power for, from behind the scenes for a long time. And he wrote a book called Memoirs in 2002. And he said, for more than a century, ideological extremists at either end of the political spectrum have seized upon well-publicized incidents to attack the Rockefeller family for their inordinate influence that they claim we wield over American political and economic institutions. Some even believe that we are a part of a secret cabal working against the best interest of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists, and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will. He says, if that's the charge, I stand guilty and I'm proud of it. So right here, David Rockefeller admitted that they were pushing for world government. And so you have them, these men, like the Rockefellers and Kissinger and all these men, a lot of these men are above the deep state operatives. They operate outside of the realm of the Constitution and law and sovereignty. They operate on an international scale through international bodies such as the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and other organizations, non-governmental organizations, and through the UN and so on, to push for an end run in national sovereignty. And there was another gentleman, Richard Gardner, who wrote a book, The Hard Road to World Order, or at least an article, that appeared in Foreign Affairs magazine in 1974. And it was an article. I'm making a correction. It wasn't a book. But Gardner stated this. In short, the House of World Order would have to be built from the bottom up rather than from the top down. It will look like a great booming, buzzing confusion, to use William James' famous description of reality, but an end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned frontal assault. So here's what we have, people, an end run to national sovereignty. This is their attempt. This is why we're seeing all types of different attacks against national sovereignty, like environmental schemes, such as global warming, which would then cause laws to be passed on an international scale, making an end run to national boundaries, national law. You have the mass migration issue, which again transcends national boundaries. You have open borders, the agenda that the globalists are pushing for right now. And you have a one-world currency scheme that they've been trying to push for a while but have not been able to achieve. And I've talked about this. I published an article that I think in 2010 or 11 that talks about this, which sooner or later, if the globalists have their way, will happen. And then you have this refugee crisis that's going on. That's an engineered crisis. They create chaos in the Middle East, which then, you know, forces refugees to leave those war-torn areas, these chaotic areas, to move to the industrialized nations of the world, primarily Europe and the United States. And this all goes back. I've talked about this before too, with Maurice Strong and meetings that they had in Rio de Janeiro, and they pushed these environmental schemes, but they're also pushing terrorism. Recently, we had, you know, this compound that was found in New Mexico, and then all of a sudden, we have all these terrorist threats again cropping up that you see in the news, with Iran stating that they have terror cells here in the United States. So the elites have, you know, always have something up their sleeve. And if they can't do one thing, they'll do another. They push environmental terrorism. They push global terrorism. They push this Russian collusion nonsense that's failing miserably. And so now they're back on the terrorism. But overall, if you don't believe in a deep state, first of all, you only have to do is look into the major newspapers and the stories right now, and you'll recognize that there is a shadow government. They talk about it. You know, you have the continuity plan, the continuity of government scheme that that the president and them have pushed, especially during the 9/11 attacks. There is a shadow government. But if you were to talk about these things right now, you know that this deep state does indeed exist, but it's unelected. And it's within our executive branch. And they happen to hate President Trump. And they're working to undermine his presidency and overthrow him. But now it's all coming out. The Mueller investigation is falling apart. The deep state operatives have been discovered. And their scheme has been discovered. And one of the primary investigators of this is an organization that is not on my brain right now. But they are coming out with Judicial Watch. Judicial Watch has been exposing this and filing for the Freedom of Information Act documents and so on. And now they're pushing to have the FBI and them release all of this relevant information that they have refused to release so far that would expose them as having attempted a soft coup against a duly elected president of the United States. Now, if that would have happened in the not too distant past, any attempts to overthrow a president like President Obama, for example, by any unelected officials in the executive branch, then there would have been charges of treason had this happened during the presidential administration of Obama, let's say. But now Trump comes out and they're praising. You've got people praising this attempt. And now they're, you know, shutting down conservative websites and conservative news agencies, whether you consider them mainstream or not. Alex Jones, for example, has better ratings and better, more audiences than CNN and other institutions of so-called news, but yet they shut him down because they consider his speech hate speech, but really it's just the truth, and they don't want that truth to be found out. And so this is one of the problems. And then when President Trump decides to start revoking security clearances, oh, this is treasonous as well, and all the president's trying to cover up. But nobody had a problem when President Obama tried to, or tried to shut up a whistleblower when he stripped him of his security clearance. Now, that might not be known by you, but according to the Washington Times, around 2016, there was a man named Adam Lovinger, and he was a 12-year strategist within the Pentagon's Office of Net Assessment, and he complained about questionable contracts with Stephen Halper, the FBI informant who was being paid to spy on the Trump campaign. Mr. Halper had been engaged by the FBI to make contact with Trump campaign worker, and he contacted Papadopoulos and Carter Page. Now, this is the same Halper who got the FISA warrant. Okay, they got the FISA warrant. It was actually Peter Strzok who got the FISA warrant in order to set up Halper to do the spying. You know, so we can go into all that. But anyway, so he goes in there and he makes contact with George Papadopoulos and Carter Page, who are now under indictment, by the way. And but in an internal October 2016 email to higher ups, Mr. Lovinger wrote of the moral hazard associated with the Washington headquarters services contracting with Stephen Halper, the complaint said. It said Mr. Baker hired Mr. Halper to conduct foreign relations, a job that should be confirmed or confined to government officials, it says. It was a topic of conversation within the office, Mr. Bigley told the Times. What is Halper doing and why is he being paid astronomically more than others similarly situated, it says. Now, the Office of Net Assessment conduct analysis of future threats and ways to defeat them. Okay, so this Office of Net Assessment conducts analysis of future threats, it says, and ways to defeat them. Nobody in the office seemed to know what Halper was doing for his money, Bigley said. Adam said Jim Baker, the director, kept Halper's contracts very close to the vest. Nobody seemed to have any idea what he was doing at the time. He says subcontracted out a good chunk of it to other academics. He would compile them all and then collect the balance as his fee as a middleman, which was very unusual, he says. But after he complained about this, about these what are called sweetheart deals for a best friend of Chelsea Clinton, it says Lovinger's security clearance was then pulled. Mr. Lovinger then filed a whistleblower reprisal complaint in May with the Defense Department Inspector General against James Baker, the director of the Office of Net Assessment. The complaint also singled out Washington Headquarters Services, a Pentagon support agency that awarded Halper contracts totaling hundreds of thousands of dollars. Mr. Halper was paid then $411,000 by Washington Headquarters Services on September 26, 2016 for a contract that ran until March of 2018. It says Mr. Lovinger then tried to get out and get a position with the Trump White House National Security Staff in January 2017, but then he had to deal with the allegations of the security clearance being pulled and allegations from Mr. Baker that he failed to follow security rules, which he denies, and it's now stalling his career. He also has filed an ethics complaint in July, alleging that his superiors were using security clearance revocation to punish him. So right here, I mean, you can see that he was a whistleblower trying to expose the fact that the Obama administration was spying on the Trump agency and that Halper was getting paid astronomical pay, sweetheart deals, and so on and so forth. Then he gets his security clearance revoked, but you didn't hear anything from CNN, the left, you know, or any of this. But yet now President Trump is revoking security clearances of people who are already basically under investigation, if not by the Mueller investigation, but by the Republican Congress, basically. And Devin Nunes and Jim Jordan, people like this, Trey Gowdy, all of them are exposing these people. And now Judicial Watch is coming out and showing lots of information in emails and discovered testimonies and so on that these deep state operatives are using their security clearances for more than just helping the administration or government entities, but they're actually getting paid. And then they're going on CNN and other places. And, for example, Brennan and them are stating unfacts, basically, you know, spewing fake news because there hasn't been any evidence brought forth by the Mueller investigation that is clear-cut evidence that the president somehow conspired with Russia to overthrow the elections. So this is how the deep state works. Now, in July, there was a Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post columnist, and his name is Eugene Robinson. Now, when this all came out about this attempt to undermine President Trump, this so-called Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist called this attempt patriotism. And what he did is he wrote an article called God Bless the Deep State. Okay. So in this article, he described the deep state as a propaganda term, which is intended to cast a sinister light on government officials who've spent years, often decades, mastering the details of foreign and domestic policy. So basically he's saying this is a a term used by the right to denigrate the deep state. He did acknowledge in this article that, you know, the deep state does have lots of power, but the deep state is the only thing that stands between us and the abyss, he says. So us being the democracy of the left, you know. And so he praised the deep state. And so this goes to show you how the left works, and they are for the deep state, and the deep state is for the end run on national sovereignty, and they back the elites who are above the deep state, who are part of this Novus Ordo Seclorum called the New World Order, who want global government. And what that means is then you have no national sovereignty, therefore you have no constitutional rights, which makes you not an individual, but a part of the collective. And so Democrats in Congress are powerless. The Republican leadership is spineless, Robinson warned in this same article. He said, experienced government officials know that their job is to serve the president, but what if the president does not serve the best interests of the nation? He answers, in this emergency, the loyal and honorable deep state has a higher duty. It's called patriotism. Now, isn't that something? Now, I'm going to change a little bit of his wording so you get a better feel for what he's saying, in my opinion. He says, experienced government officials know that their job is to serve the president, but what if the president does not serve the best interest of the deep state and the New World Order? Then he says, in this emergency, loyal and deep state operatives have a higher duty. It's called patriotism. So that's my point. When he says the nation, he's not talking about the nation of the United States, of the individual we the people who want freedom and to secure our constitutional republic like our forefathers, founding fathers did, who ran from tyranny to this country. But he's saying the president is not serving the interests of the secret societies of the New World Order, of the deep state, and they don't like it. And I've talked about this before. But there's another media commentator that was referenced about a coup attempt, another CNN commentator. He talked about a possible coup without condemning it, and that was a CNN counterterrorism analyst, and his name is Philip Mudd, who formerly worked for the CIA and the FBI. And here's what he had to say. He says, when do we see almost a shadow government come out and say we cannot side with the government? He asked rhetorically on CNN in July. And this is the same deep state agent who said in August of 2017 about President Trump. I don't know if you've seen the clip, but he said, let me give you one bottom line as a former government official. Government is going to kill this guy. And he's referring to the president of the United States. So these people, they are part of the deep state coup attempt. Now, the New American magazine had an article that they wrote in January called The Deep State, and they focused on, you know, the existence of a shadow government basically within the executive branch, and particularly in the intelligence community. And if you've noticed, Judicial Watch and Devin Nunes and Trey Gowdy and all of these men, Chavez, I think his name is, all of these in primarily accusing the deep state of attempting this coup attempt against the president of the United States, they have attacked mostly the intelligence community, not the entire community, but operatives within it, in the DOJ, the FBI, and so on. And also, it states in this article by the New American that there is a deep state behind the deep state. It says, quote, the power elites manipulating the levers of political power we pointed out in that report, it says, are outside as well as inside government. And they're working to submerge the United States in an emerging world government. And they stated that in their report, they wanted to focus on the deep state's stratagem for achieving this subversive scheme piece by piece and step by step. For example, in their first article, they talked about immigration and these recent calls for abolishing ICE and creating open borders and so on. Now, if you think about that, you know, President Trump in his address during the campaign and so on says, if we do not have borders, we do not have a nation. This is what constitutes a nation, people. But these people want to destroy that. And you have these mainstream news agencies. You have the mainstream news agencies who are basically fighting against that very, very, very covertly. But then you have the alternative news media, and one of which was Infowars.com. By the way, their website was attacked. A cyber attack was put on it. It was shut down, but it is now back up and running. And they do live broadcasts and so on. But a surprising clip that I saw was when Bill Maher was doing his show, and he kind of slammed the liberal opponents who were happy about the shutting down of Alex Jones. And I want you to hear this from him. I'm going to see if you can hear this. I'm going to play it real quick.
I will never. That's your America, not that great. I'm not officially excommunicated.
All right. So I went into my free speech for a minute because Alex Jones, who is not my friend and who tells crazy lies about me, is thrown off Twitter, I think, and Facebook and a few other platforms. I think he's going to.
Thank God!
Well. If you're a liberal, you're supposed to be for free speech. That's free speech for the speech you hate. That's what free speech means. We're losing the thread of the concepts that are important to this country. If you care about the real American shit or you don't, and if you do, it goes for every side. I don't like Alex Jones, but Alex Jones gets to speak. Everybody gets to speak.
Sure, buddy.
Now, I cut it off there because after that, they tried to come back and say, well, he's talking this and he's talking that and he's talking everything else. But basically, and then kind of after that, Bill kind of cowered back and said, well, yeah. But here initially, you can see that he's saying that, you know, your enemies have the right to speak as well. In other words, liberalism used to defend that. No matter how much I hate what you're saying, I will defend you to the end, your right to say that. And so now the progressives have become regressives. Now they're supporting socialism, which is just a national form of international communism. And so this is something that you have to understand. And this deep state is very, very intent upon destroying national sovereignty. And like I was saying, Richard Gardner was a Columbia University professor. And he was the one who talked about an end run on national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, that will accomplish more than the old-fashioned frontal assault. He held ambassadorships in the Carter and Clinton administration as well. And so to the extent that our president, you know, has came in and said what? Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo. He said, no longer will we heed the false song of globalism. He's attacking the very institutions that the New World Order and these elites have taken long steps to create. And now he's coming in and he's protecting the borders. He's backing away from these sovereignty-destroying free trade agreements and regimes and et cetera. And he's becoming this obstacle to the globalists. And, you know, because America first, they don't want to hear that. That's anathema to them, to these globalists. They don't want that. They want to stop it. They want to obliterate that idea. And if it means toppling the president of the United States, they have no problem with that. Because as there was a see if I can find it real quick, but what's his name? Newt Gingrich said one time in an interview about Trump. I'll see if I can find it. He said a very profound thing that caught my attention in the interview. I'll see if I can find that clip where he says this. Now, listen to this. This is he was on an interview, on, I think, on Fox News, and he talks about the media, how they're terrified of Donald Trump. But listen to what he says in the interview, which I thought was amazing.
Where is the Republican Party in chaos? Joining us in Washington, Newt Gingrich. So how do you assess Mitt Romney's speech today? Why did he give it today? What is he trying to accomplish?
Well, let me say, first of all, I was a little surprised just because I was with Mitt in Las Vegas when Donald Trump endorsed him. And I remember how effusively Mitt thanked Donald and praised him and talked about him as a great job creator. So it's a little bit over the top today. But I think Mitt represents personally the panic of the establishment wing of the party. And I think they all hoped, held their breath through Super Tuesday. It didn't work. And now they're faced with a very real prospect of Donald Trump becoming the leader of the party, and it absolutely drives them crazy. They just cannot imagine cheering. Well, because he's an outsider. He's not them. He's not part of the club. He's uncontrollable. You know, he hasn't been through the initiation rites. He didn't belong to the secret society. And I think that they don't see him. They have no idea how to relate to him. And they don't want to pay attention to him. And despite the fact, and you were right, by the way, he's only gotten, you know, about 35 to 40% of the vote. So he's not yet guaranteed to be the nominee.
Well, and obviously we know that he did. But you heard what he said. He said he's not part of their club. He didn't graduate from the secret societies. Well, what secret societies were these? Well, the Skull and Bones group from Yale University, John Kerry and, you know, President Herbert Walker Bush and his son, George Bush, graduated from, as well as others. But he didn't graduate from these societies. He is an outsider. And this is why they hate President Trump. And this is why they want to destroy him, because he is defending this idea of Americanism, national sovereignty. And not only that, but other countries are starting to catch the brush fires of liberty and want to do the same. So there's a lot at stake. And it's important that we support the president, because it's a matter of the survival of our country as a sovereign nation, a free and independent nation. So we've got to take steps to restore the country, obviously. And so this is why I want to talk about the deep state. Now, you know, what's interesting too, I found another article. It was actually an interview on YouTube, Jake Morfonius, who is a reporter who has his own website, who would do lots of investigations and had been doing investigations on the Las Vegas shooting, by the way. He appeared on the Hagman Report. And so I'm going to play a little bit of this, because this was a precursor to several there's been obviously other conservative websites and YouTube videos that have been taken down, but he was just one example of one of these conservative voices being shut down for presenting views that the deep state did not want presented, such as false flag operations, the possibility of staged events, and so on. And he talks about this because he was referring to some events that were taking place in the Las Vegas shooting. And as he was doing that, then his YouTube videos were being censored for, you know, or shut down by YouTube for what he said was bullying and so on. So I'm going to play a little bit of this from the Hagman Report so you can hear this. This is a very, very interesting.
When you're out there isolated and alone and you get censored or blacklisted, what other recourse do you have if you don't have other like-minded people out there? And all of Jake's 135,000 YouTube subscribers, gone. All his content, gone. It really is a shame. Jake, welcome back to the Hagmann Report.
Thanks. Great to talk with you.
So let's start here. You're a second strike on your YouTube channel. And Dad and folks in the studio, this is really interesting.
And I want to report that, by the way, that this was back in March of 2018. So this was happening. This has been happening. But he, you know, he has very compelling reports, very knowledgeable journalist, alternative news journalist that is very well informed and very well spoken and always presents compelling facts and documentation with his reports. So that's, I just want to make note of that because listen to what happened to him.
Right before Jake got his third strike, he obviously got his second strike. Well, guess what his second strike stemmed from? It was an interview that he did on our show, the Hagmann Report.
You know,
Jake, can you tell us a little bit
about this? Yeah, I just want to say this. Jake, I for some reason, I feel the need to say, man, I'm sorry. And I mean that. Okay. Look, I don't know what – I'm just sorry. If we had anything to do with that, obviously we did.
Oh, no, you most certainly didn't. There was – so this second strike that I got – I got received one strike February 27th, and that was just ridiculous. It was a five-minute episode that I had done a couple of years ago where I was talking just from a historical perspective, what is a false flag? It was trying to explain to people new to the subject, when you hear someone say false flag, what does that mean? So I cited historical examples that most historians agree on, such as the Gulf of Tonkin incident that led to the outbreak of the Vietnam War, some things like that. So it wasn't one of these weird conspiracy theory things talking about how people never get shot. Anything. It was just history, very simple, straightforward, the kind of thing that I think would be appropriate in any history class in America. But they gave me a strike for that. The second strike came the next day, and this was from an episode that I had done with you guys. I pulled just a five-minute clip from one of the shows that we did together. And in that clip, I'm speaking with John Roberson about how unfortunate it is that there are some fringe conspiracy theorists that are offering just really ridiculous and, I guess, offensive theories to explain what happened in Las Vegas on October 1st. I wasn't at all saying they don't have a right to their opinions, but some of these, like nobody got shot, nobody got hurt, they're all crisis actors. That's what I was saying, making the point that by association, what happens when you have that kind of stuff promoted, it makes the rest of us look a little bit loony by association. And so John and I were talking about that, how there is good, legitimate research to be done by citizen journalists, and I specifically said in that clip that I do believe that people were shot, that I didn't think that it was a fake event, and so there was no community standard violation, and yet YouTube pulled that down and said that I was guilty of bullying, that it violated the standard on bullying. Go figure.
Wow.
Bullying who?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I asked.
And how is that extrapolated? In other words, can you walk me through your hypothesis as to how – I'm not even sure how to form this question. How do they extrapolate that or arrive at that bullying charge, allegation? Is it just the keywords in there, or the words that they don't obviously not paying attention to the content? I'm confused.
I assume it's just a catch-all. I think that there was an algorithm that was out there snagging as many videos with certain keywords in them, and then flagging those, and they were pulling them down. Now, I just don't accept YouTube's explanation that it was an accident, that they just hired a bunch of new people and that
– And he goes on about it. But my point to that was I wanted to show that one of the main things that he stated And of course, you hear the argument from the left, from these social media conglomerates and so on, stating the reason they took down Alex Jones was that they stated that he claimed that he himself was pushing the idea that there were crisis actors only in the Sandy Hook shootings, and the fact that you know, he uses these ideas, and so they stated that this was affecting the you know, the survivors and so on. Well, then here on the Hagman report, here Jake Morfonius is stating the same thing, that they were saying that he was saying that there were crisis actors used in the Las Vegas shootings. And he was saying, no, I didn't say that. I was stating that I do believe there were real people shot and people killed and so on. And so this is what they have been utilizing, and they've been using the same retread over and over and over to attack conservatives, mixing them up with these crazy conspiracy theories on YouTube and on websites that state otherwise. Now, me, I've always shied away from some of these ideas that there were only crisis actors and all this stuff. I do believe that the Sandy Hook shooting had a shooting. My viewpoint is not to try to break down these shootings and try to discover exactly what happened at them. Mine more so is from the idea that when the shooting occurs, whether it was organic, whether it was staged, whether there was a false flag, or whether there was a stand down or what have you, how will the government and the deep state and the New World Order elites utilize it to their advantage? And that's what I try to look at, because most of the time in these examples, they use it for gun control, because that's one of the primary goals on the New World Order bucket list, if you will, that they have, is to take away your ability to defend yourself and the ability of we the people to defend ourselves from a tyrannical government. And that's why our founding fathers gave us the Second Amendment. Well, they didn't give it, but they kind of just revealed it in the Constitution of the United States. And so these elites want to destroy that aspect as well. And so these are some of the things that I'm going to be talking about, but one of the main things that I want to talk about, and I think I will cover a little bit of it today, is this idea. One of the main things that we've been seeing in the news lately has been the biggest fight by the left, by the elites, is this push for open borders. And, you know, because if you have no borders, then you have no country. But these leftists who are out here pushing for, you know, abolishing the border and not building a wall and abolishing ICE and all these things, are yelling, no borders, no walls, no sanctuary, or no borders, no walls, and sanctuary for all. no ban, no wall, no borders at all. I mean, nutcases. And so basically these are what are called democratic socialists. And this is basically now the new term of the Democratic Party. We're not socialist, we're democratic socialists. You know, and you can watch all these videos and you can go on their websites and you can look at their pages that these agitators, if you will, are chanting. And, you know, they've invaded D.C. now. They've gone into restaurants and kicked out conservatives, and they've harassed the Department of Homeland Security lately. The secretary, what's her name? Nielsen. And, you know, she was in there eating dinner, and they come in there and just attacked her, basically. And then they attacked Sarah Sanders and so on. You know, this is their now agenda. And you had Maxine Waters telling people to do that, get in their faces and don't make them comfortable. Don't let them be welcome anywhere. And yet they want to attack conservatives and they want to attack Trump supporters and state that we're fascists. But the tactics being used by Antifa and these anti-Trump groups are tactics right out of Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. Basically, you know, a buddy and a mentor of Barack Obama, president of the United States in the previous administration. And, you know, the Democratic Party is pushing this, and they want these radicals to basically permeate the whole entire Democratic Party. And basically it has, and this is the problem. But after the election of President Trump, the DSA has now enjoyed growth. They've recruited lots of the, you know, Bernie Sanders group that, you know, backed Bernie Sanders before he was ousted by Hillary Clinton illegally, by the way. And when I say DSA, that's the Democratic Socialist of America, the DSA. But, you know, so they have grown since then. There was about 7,000 of them during the Hillary era and Bernie Sanders era. And they had about 15 local chapters around the year 2000. But now they have about 44,000 members, and they have hundreds of chapters all over the United States. And one of the main things that they have put their backing into is the No Borders, you know, campaign, which is, you know, used to only be really backed by extremist groups like the Communist Party and the Revolutionary Communist Party, the La Raza, so on, you know, Acorn and them. But now it's, you know, it's becoming predominant, and it's permeating the Democratic Party up to the levels of Congress and stuff. And basically you've got nutcases like Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi basically backing this as well, wanting to turn, you know, the United States into Atsland. Is that what they – or Mexifornia, basically. So you have now the Democratic Party and them pushing for this open border scenario and denouncing the wall, you know, as not attainable, not affordable, and so on, which I've done reports in the past that show that it clearly is affordable to do and necessary. But now they also want to abolish ICE, which is utter insanity. And they've gotten a lot of these candidates, Democratic candidates and so on, to back this idea. And so this is where we have the problem. But, you know, the majority of American people are seeing behind this and wanting a border wall, basically. And you remember, there's been clips you can go on YouTube, and you can see in the past where the Democrats, when it was convenient, would advocate for a wall, condemned illegal aliens, and so on. And now that President Trump gets in, you see, the difference with them is they would say we need a wall and we're going to crack down on illegal aliens and so on, but they would never do it. Now you get President Trump in, who says the same thing, but yet he then puts it into action, and they don't like that. They want you to think that they're going to secure the borders, and they want you to think that they're going to control illegal immigration. They just don't want you to know that they're really not going to do that. You know, so now you get a president that comes in who actually is really doing it, and this pisses them off, and they don't want that to happen. Now, there was a guy named Glenn Simmons who said, he was a commentator, that if you defeat border security, then you can defeat national security. And if you can defeat national security, you defeat peace, justice, and security, and the American dreams of equal treatment and freedom then can no longer exist. And so this is the point, people. This is why we voted for Trump. This is why we defend his presidency. And for people out there who who are backing this socialism, who are backing democracy. It's a dangerous thing. And this is what we're fighting against. But this is what the deep state wants. And then if you add no borders equals no nation, remember, this is what President Trump was basically saying. Well, what does it equal then? It equals world government. And that's what you have. And centralized governments have never offered the opportunities to the common man for wealth and personal freedom that America has offered us. And this is what we are defending. We are defending the right to be individuals, the right to have a conscience, to worship God in the way that we see, to speak in the manner that we choose. In other words, to have an opinion, to be able to have the freedom of speech, the right to assemble, the right to be secure in our property, the right to defend ourselves. All of these things fall under national security and national sovereignty. And that is something that the global elites want to destroy. And the Democrats have been pushing this no borders issue with momentum, like a snowball going down a hill, getting bigger and bigger, because they're under the impression, basically, that Congress and the electorate and all these people are going to ultimately support this idea and then get behind them. And so they've had a lot of high-profile events, and of course they've got all these different groups backed by and paid for by Soros and other elites that want this end run on national sovereignty as well. So first and foremost, there's been a lot of, this furious push by these, abolish the border agitators, if you will, these people who have been backed by the media as well, the fake news media, the criminal news network and others, over what has recently happened with President Trump and this whole separating the children from their parents policy, which was basically zero tolerance policy, which was not intended to necessarily separate children from their parents. What it was intended to do was to stop all illegal aliens from coming into the country. If you were not coming in through proper channels, you were illegal and you need to be stopped. And this is what the policy was for, but it didn't make any difference to these propagandists because they felt that, Trump was abusing the administration and these procedures were basically unlawful and so on. But at the same time, they didn't want to, open up the fact that the Obama administration was doing the same thing or worse. So this is, what has been happening. And of course, you've got outrage not only from the left, but also from elements of the right, the GOP. This is why when, Newt Gingrich said that Trump didn't graduate from these secret societies, that he's really not on the left or right. He's an outsider. This is the main reason they want him out. And then you had an event that recently came up in June that was, an upset against the Democrats, basically, in a congressional district known as the New York, in New York, the 14th district or congressional district. From an article, unknown community activist Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez toppled longtime incumbent Representative Joe Crowley, chairman of the House Democratic Caucus and one of the most powerful Democrats in Washington. Many had proposed him as a likely replacement for Nancy Pelosi as House Minority Leader, and they hoped also for House Speaker, should the Democrats retake the House. Typical of New York City Democratic polls, Representative Crowley hewed to the left, earning an abysmal 20% voting record in the current Congress. And but it says, but Crowley was not left enough for the Democratic Socialists of America, so of which Ocasio-Cortez is a member. And now this lady's wacko, but they're now backing her. Her DSA comrades swarmed to the streets of Queens and the Bronx to knock on doors and hand out her campaign literature, says the deep state media, which has gone overboard gushing about her popular campaign, has ignored her DSA and communist support while hyping her telegenic star quality as a millennial activist and a Latina progressive. So they've got this lady now, and it appears that all of Congress and everybody's backing her. And she has radical ideas of extreme socialism, people. And this is what they're pushing. She hasn't wasted any time in making the No Borders Abolish ICE theme one of her signature campaign issues. In fact, the day before the primary vote, she was down on the U.S.-Mexico border protesting the Trump administration's immigration border policies. And it says, appearing on the left Democracy Now! Television program the day after the primary triumph, she called for a new militancy, urging activists to mobilize and occupy all ICE offices, airports, and the whole border as a means of resistance to the rising fascism of the Trump era. She stated that the nation is in a moral crisis and the moral character of the United States is at stake. Hence, she says, we have a rapid response. We have to occupy all of it. We need to occupy every airport. We need to occupy every border. We need to occupy every ICE office. You might think that she's just, you know, rattling only a few cages, but this is dangerous, people. This is something that we have to be aware of, because they are permeating the entire Democratic Party. And if you don't think so, well, think again. More and more, listen to the news, listen to these radical congressmen in the Democratic left, and you'll see more and more that these people are backing democratic socialism. And so this is something that they are pushing for, and I'll talk a little bit more about it. I am going to get ready to sign out, but I'm going to continue talking about this idea of destroying national boundaries. This is the main thing that they are working on. This is why they are pushing for defunding the wall and giving so many arguments against President Trump for building the wall. This is why he's having such a hard time getting it done, although there are reports that it is starting, you know, funding for it and so on. There's issues of that. But the deep state is in panic mode, and there are the Mueller investigation is not doing so well. They still haven't come out with anything. They always have these news reports, however, that, oh, he's going to break any day now. He's going to have concrete evidence of all this, that, and the other. If they had that, they would have already brought it forth by now. It's almost 2 years. So I'm going to continue to talk about these things. There's going to be some other things we're going to talk about. So it's going to be an ongoing radio series, in effect. But I'm going to continue to talk about this No Borders, No Nation program of the New World Order, of the elites that they're pushing for. And now they're getting more and more through, you know, these colleges, through universities, through all types of propaganda, teaching the new millennials that borders are racist, that if you have that national, you know, that nationalism in and of itself is racist, that is white supremacist, that the idea of having national sovereignty is racist again and homophobic and what do you call it, Islamophobic and all that. And then we'll talk about terrorism and other things too. So I am going to sign off. Please check out my website, Sic Semper Tyrannis News, and my YouTube channel, Matenyahu, M-A-T-H-E-N-Y-A-H-U. And then, of course, come here to We're Hit Radio. I will post these things on Facebook so that you can, you know, check out any articles that I come out with in the future. Take care of yourself.